The Guardian.
Hello, I'm John Henley. Welcome to the Focus podcast. This week, we're looking at the British National Minimum Wage. That's the minimum hourly rate that employers are legally obliged to pay their workers. And it's going up this week by a princely 13 pence for those aged 21 and over, from £5.80 to £5.93 an hour. The idea of a minimum wage is now generally accepted, but the level it should be set at and the amount it should rise by each year are part of what is still an often highly emotive debate. And at University College London, a campaign for a living wage for catering and cleaning staff is part of a far wider movement that's now aimed at establishing a higher minimum wage for the very lowest paid. In other words, a minimum wage that people can actually live on. We're gathered in the main courtyard of the college. There are a crowd of protesters outside holding up banners and posters. UCL, shame on you, living wage now. Probably a couple of hundred people here.
UCL is just one of many businesses and organisations that are coming under increasing pressure to pay their staff a higher rate than the statutory minimum wage, first established in Britain by New Labour in 1999 as a radical and at the time highly controversial economic policy, and one that's often held up today by the party as a triumph of social justice.
But we want to push them further. They can pay the living wage before contracts are renewed. There is precedent for this elsewhere. There's no reason UCL cannot do it here. We also want
the minimum wage is a great Labour legacy.
Guardian columnist Polly Toynbee has long taken a special interest in the issue of low pay.
The minimum wage was a promise that goes right back to Keir Hardie and the founding days of the Labour Party. For all of those decades, Labour did nothing about it, even when it was in power. So when Labour came in 1997, it was quite a landmark that they brought in the minimum wage at that time against fierce opposition from the CBI and from the Tories and from a whole phalanx of right-wingers who said this will mean at least a million unemployed. Well, within a short time of it coming in, actually, a million more jobs were created, so it didn't destroy jobs. And it did lift at least, nearly 2 million, mostly women, out of very, very low paid, some of them as little as £1.50 an hour.
The Conservative Party and business leaders were perhaps less surprisingly dead set against the minimum wage. But there were some other surprising voices in the no camp too. The trade unions, for example, were convinced that it would undermine the principle of collective bargaining and pull down pay rates above it, eroding the differentials, it was known as. And Ed Balls, one of the recent Labour leadership contenders, wrote in 1991 that the allure of the minimum wage was deceptive and should be resisted. If New Labour's objective, he said, was to eradicate poverty, then the minimum wage was not the answer. And it could make it even harder to achieve those ends. Steve Hughes is economics advisor at the British Chambers of Commerce, who serve businesses across the UK.
Essentially what people were suggesting was that a minimum wage, at what level it was imposed, would affect the demand for labour from UK businesses, from UK employers. If you put the level too high, obviously that affects the need for labour, or certainly the requirement for labour, if you increase the marginal cost of employing a person. Now, the fear was that if you impose this minimum wage and don't have the market dictating what wage should be paid by employers, then it'll only lead to more unemployed. You know, fundamentally, you don't want to set the wage too high so as to prevent or inhibit businesses taking on staff. That's the fundamental point. Now, that was the worry where it was. If you set the wage low enough, it fundamentally means that businesses will all be paying that wage anyway and generally won't have to absorb any extra labour costs.
Right, and the counter-argument, I suppose, from those who were proposing it was that there was exploitation and that the certain sectors of workers were being exploited, basically.
Well, exactly. I mean, if businesses, the argument was that if you exploit labour, if you have people who are employed on virtually a pittance, certainly it's not enough to live on.
Despite continuing objections, though, the initial target was set at two-thirds of average earnings. Tony Blair, however, decided to set up a low-pay commission, which would set a rate each year after consultations with economists and researchers. Although there were strong objections to the minimum wage when it was first introduced, its effects now seem to have been pretty benign. One study by the London School of Economics found no detrimental effect whatsoever on job creation, although another did show quite significant price rises in things like takeaway foods, canteen meals, and hotel and domestic services. Steve Hughes again.
When the minimum wage was introduced, it was just before we had this huge boom in the economy, and it meant that private enterprise could absorb the cost very well, and therefore, essentially, it came out in the wash, i.e., it was fairly smooth transition into just being able to take on board this extra labour cost, if indeed there was an extra labour cost. The debate surrounds the economic reality of it exists, it's not going away, what should we do to it each year?
One of the biggest objections to the minimum wage is quite simply that it's not enough to live on. It was supposed to lift people out of poverty, but the Joseph Rowntree Foundation says that despite the minimum wage, low pay, expensive childcare and job insecurity mean that there are now just as many children living in poverty as there were in 2000. Stephen Baskerville, from the East London-based grassroots charity London Citizen, is part of a campaign to encourage businesses and organisations to sign up to paying their staff what he calls a London living wage.
London Citizens began the Living Wage campaign in 2001. It came out of concerns among our community leaders about the lack of time that they had for raising their children, spending time with their family because they were working so much on such low pay.
Is it right that the minimum wage should be effectively a poverty wage? I mean, the minimum wage was supposed to lift people out of poverty.
Well, that's a very difficult question. I mean, I think the idea of a nationally established minimum wage, legal minimum, is a good idea. But I think we also need to recognise that that's the outcome of a political decision, of a calculation of interests with the unions and the influence of big business on government, and that actually it's not calculated according to an index of the cost of living. So
it's more of a gesture, really.
It's totally insufficient for people who want to make a decent living and have a basic standard of life, enough time to do some social activities at the weekend, spend time with their children, give input into their children's lives, and raise their children properly.
Although several other London universities are now paying the London living wage, UCL has until now refused to. The provost, Malcolm Grant, was vehemently against the idea, but he's had a change of heart.
Congratulations!
So we're just heading into UCL, University College London, where there's a meeting, a triumphant meeting of the UCL Living Wage campaign, which has been campaigning for some time now for the lowest paid and most vulnerable staff of the college, namely largely the cleaners and catering staff, to be paid a living wage rather than the minimum wage, probably about £2.50 an hour more than they're getting. And apparently the provost, who's been holding out against this and arguing that the university just can't afford it, has finally climbed down and agreed to pay a living wage.
But this is a fantastic victory. This is the beginning of the end of the poverty pay at UCL, but it isn't the end. We encourage you to come and support us again on events like this.
Sol Ganza is one of the UCL students behind the campaign.
Over a period of about 2 years, the campaign's been running because a number of contracted cleaning staff and catering staff are paid £6 an hour, which...
The minimum wage.
Minimum wage with London Waiting. And basically, even the Mayor, Boris Johnson, has said that that's unacceptable.
And what I say, if an old Tory like Boris Johnson can implement the living wage and support the living wage, then surely UCL, with its proud history of egalitarianism and social justice, can pay the living wage.
We received an email at 1 o'clock this morning to all members of staff. Obviously, some of our staff are included in the campaign, and they have said that they will agree to pay the living wage as contracts are renewed. And this is quite an important and, which I should perhaps stress, they've also said that they will perhaps review the size of the contract in line with the financial constraints which they face at this time. Now, we in the campaign don't believe that the financial constraints that UCL has are that serious.
It's not only students who've been campaigning for this. Academic staff have also expressed their concern at the low wages being paid to contract cleaners and kitchen workers. Jane Ferry is a senior research fellow in the Department of Public Health. She saw an email from the Provost explaining exactly why he was opposed to the idea.
The Provost sent an all-staff email which was said that this was a very seductive campaign and it appeared to be fairly anonymous, and that UCL hadn't got the money. It was going to cost this very large amount of money, about £400,000 was what his estimate was at the time, and that we couldn't afford it, and anyway they were accused of people wanting to work for these companies for this sort of money, and that was sort of the going rate in the market.
One of the kitchen staff, who preferred to remain anonymous, explained to me what impact a living wage might have on him and his colleagues.
And if you look at it overall, that's a few hundred pounds at the end of the month, you know, to every catering staff. That means that some people cannot at least have savings. I mean, life was really difficult living without savings, you know.
So what difference will it make to you personally, do you think?
I think it's about, being happy about what I do, being happy at work and knowing that most of my colleagues are at least living a moderate life, being able to eat a balanced diet, being able to support their families, and just being happy to work for UCL as well. Yeah. And I think we're going to see a greater improvement in terms of staff morale and in terms of the quality of work that UCL gets.
Joe Casserly is a fourth year student who's involved in the campaign.
Obviously today is quite a good day for us. We've managed to persuade the Provost to agree in principle to a living wage for the staff, so it's very good.
What justification was there for not paying a living wage?
For me, there isn't really a justification there. I mean, I think for them, the justification was that they weren't in charge of the cleaning contracts. It was outsourced to other companies who then determined the paying conditions of the workers. Therefore, it wasn't, in a sense, their responsibility. And I think one of the principles of the campaign is that even if a contract is outsourced, it's still the responsibility of the university that these staff are paid a fair wage and work in good conditions. A lot of students themselves work for low wages. I, for instance, don't earn the living wage. So, I mean, for a lot of students themselves, it's an important issue. And I think it's kind of something that really like struck a chord with people, because we know that there's inequality in our society. People understand that, but it's when you look at the wages of cleaners and the wages of someone like the Provost, who earns over £400,000 a year, you can see, I mean, that's inequality right there. Like, within one institution, you can just see it, like, perfectly displayed.
I spoke to a cleaner who's currently employed on the minimum wage by a subcontractor at the university. He earns £11,000 a year before tax. And for him, it's urgent that things improve.
I have been working at the UCL about 10 years ago with different cleaning companies, and all the time I get paid the minimum wage.
What is the minimum wage for you then?
Now it's £5.80.
£5.80 an hour. Can you live on that?
I struggle to live with that because I can meet my cost of living because I have a wife and a daughter. When my daughter is on school holidays, we have to keep her at home because we can't afford to pay for her to go on activities or holidays. Mm-hmm. Something.
And,
like
and
that.
Does your wife work?
My wife used to work, but 3 months ago she had a stroke, and now she's unable to work. So she's permanently ill, and she's receiving treatment by neurologists. At the present, I have been forced into debt. I get a loan from the bank about 4 months ago.
How much did you have to borrow?
£5,000. And I owe £3,000 on credit cards, which I struggle to pay back the interest every month.
Once you've paid your rent and all the kind of fixed costs, how much do you actually have to live on? How much does your family have to live on?
Very little. I have very little left. I can buy quality food. I had to buy boxes of frozen food, frozen chicken or whatever is cheaper.
It's cheapest.
UCL prides itself on, you know, on its founding father, Jeremy Bentham. It prides itself on being the first university to admit women, the first university to give equal rights to people of Jewish origin, the first university to give immigrants the opportunity to study. So these are its founding principles.
Jane Ferry is particularly keen to see improvements in pay and conditions at UCL. She works in a department that was commissioned to make recommendations to the government and the World Health Organization on social inequality.
In our department, over the last few years, Professor Michael Marmot, who's the head of department, was asked by the WHO to produce his commission on social determinants in health. And on the back of that, he was asked by the UK government to look at inequalities and how to implement the recommendations of the WHO Commission in the UK. So, of course, this very much fits with the whole remit. And number four of those recommendations was that steps should be taken to determine a minimum income for healthy living, and this should be applied universally. This was one of the recommendations to the UK government from this report. It came from our department. UCL was very pleased to be associated with this extremely high profile work, and what we see as this is a sort of local implementation, you know, sort of these things should begin at home.
UCL may have been slow to sign up to the idea of a living wage, but some very big businesses have now taken it on board, including Barclays Bank, KPMG and PricewaterhouseCoopers, among around 100 other organisations in London, including the Greater London Authority. Steve Sherwood, Director of Infrastructure Operations at PwC, explained why they decided to ensure their lowest paid staff are on more than just the minimum wage.
We see no real conflict between being a commercial operation but still having an awareness around the vulnerable.
And so have you noticed a difference in terms of things like staff turnover?
Yes, we have.
It's something that you'd recommend to other companies in a similar position?
I think there is a strong case for embracing and exploring things like the living wage. Clearly there are individual businesses will have their challenges.
So what's the future for the minimum wage under the new coalition government? And where does the Labour Party want to take it? Will they come down firmly in favour of a living wage, as Ed Miliband suggested in his election campaign, and repeated in his first speech as new Labour Party leader? Or are times still too tough for businesses to take on the extra cost? Mohamed Sawar, the Labour MP for Glasgow Central.
All I can say is that the Labour Party was right to introduce national minimum wage, and it is also right that with the passage of time we should increase that limit.
Former government advisor Tom Clark.
It's always attractive to put up the minimum wage. As a way of reducing poverty, it's not always the most effective because there are things like tax credits that look at family income, which is often more important than what each individual in the household is earning. And those things can be put up without the same risk of unemployment coming around the corner. And so I think there probably is scope to increase the minimum wage a little bit. But of course, it's a time of stagnation across the economy as a whole. Wages aren't rising. And you'll find some shops and some businesses will say we're going to use fewer people if it went up too quickly.
Just as I was leaving UCL, Malcolm Grant, the Provost, agreed to speak to me about why he'd changed his mind.
Well, what we have done is agree that we will work towards implementing the London Living Wage pay rates over the next couple of years. I think that our students ran a good campaign, and I think it's very difficult in the current economic climate when we know that significant cuts are going to hit universities to try to balance all the social virtues that we would want to respect, but we're going to struggle and see if we can find a way.
Do you regret not having appeared more sort of conciliatory from the start. And the way that this has been portrayed in some parts of the press, as you know, that at UCL, particularly given the history and the traditions of UCL, you know, do you regret having sort of said, no, we can't afford to do it?
No, I mean, I think we've taken this slowly and carefully and thought it through thoroughly, as you would expect. It's not a matter where you jump to instant judgment, because there may well be jobs at stake. There's always a balance that has to be struck between employment levels and employment rates.
The agreement that's been struck now, you're hoping to implement when?
What we've announced that we will do is work towards achieving London living wage pay rates in the next couple of years. Now, we've deliberately left that in those terms, because what we'd ideally want to do, as with the other Bloomsbury institutions, is to review our contracts as they fall due. However, we've also explored the possibility of review within the course, within the life of a contract. I don't want to do that on a basis which would mean that we suffered a penalty in terms of the contract, so everything has to be negotiated with the contractors to try and achieve the best optimal outcome.
But this is a fantastic victory. This is the beginning of the end of the poverty pay at UCL.
But the future is still very uncertain for this cleaner at the university.
A lot of my colleagues need are quite urgently. I heard that this is going to be implemented in a couple of years. I hope it comes soon.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.